Good evening.
So, a journey of several weeks, we begin to explore the Eightfold Path. And we'll be doing this once a month for 8 months. And tonight, Sylvia will start us off by giving a discussion, facilitating a discussion about right thought. Sylvia, thank you very much for preparing this discussion and for leading us. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Well, thank you for coming. As Les said, we're going to have a discussion about right thought, which is part of the Eightfold Path that Shakyamuni Buddha gave to us so that we can relieve our suffering. I'm going to give just a little presentation, and then I've handed out some questions so that we can all explore together our thoughts on right thought. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about thoughts for a while to get ready for this. I sent out an email, and I gave a quote by a man who wrote a book called What the Buddha Taught. His name is Walpola Raulula. And I, for those of you who didn't get the email, I'd like to go over that again. Quote, right thought denotes the thoughts of selfless renunciation or detachment, thoughts of love and thoughts of nonviolence, which are extended to all beings. It is very interesting and important to note here that thoughts of selfless detachment, love, and nonviolence are grouped on the side of wisdom. This clearly shows that the true wisdom is endowed with these noble qualities, and that all thoughts of selfish desire, ill will, hatred, and violence are the result of a lack of wisdom. In all spheres of life, whether individual, social, or political. End quote. So that's his take on right thought. So I'd like to share some of my experience as a result of my Zazen practice on this subject. Came to mind was when we sit Zazen, I like to think that, or when I sit Zazen, I like to think that I'm in a garden, and I'm cultivating the soil so that flowers can come up, weeds can come up. And I want everything to come into my awareness. And the more I sit Zazen, I think and hope that I'll be better at letting this happen. The thoughts and the weeds and whatever enters this garden. Sometimes I like what comes up, and sometimes I don't. I see a rose, and I think, oh, that's wonderful. Look at that rose. I see a weed, and I think, ah, I don't want that weed. I have strong feelings about weeds. But there it is. So what am I going to do with this weed? So what happens is my own prejudices come up, my own discrimination, my own repetitive negative or positive thoughts, ideas, fantasies arise to influence what is arising moment after moment in my life. Through mindfulness and through our Zazen practice, I am trying to pay attention to what is arising. Because sometimes there's a lot of clutter going on in my head. And I'm missing what is arising in front of me. Or something comes up and I say, no, I don't want that. You know, I want this or I want that. Or I have baggage about what is arising. I don't want to accept it. Or maybe I want something more than something else because I have these ideas in my head of the way I think everything should go at the moment. And this can be everything from I want chocolate ice cream and they don't have any at the store and I might have to accept something else like strawberry. Anger comes up. Frustration. These are thoughts. So what am I going to do with them? They're beings. They're alive. And here they are in my life at any given moment. So right thought or maybe correct or appropriate thought would be to allow compassion and empathy to arise and love and non-judgment and experience everything just as it is. And this is a wonderful thing to say. Wouldn't it be nice if we could all just accept anything that comes up at every moment? But we're, as human beings, we tend not to want that. We tend to be very judgmental and we tend to want something or something's there and we don't want it. You know what I'm talking about. And that causes suffering. It causes me suffering. I sit Zazen because I want the world to arise at the moment and I want to experience it. That means everything that is arising at the moment. And to try to nourish the thoughts that come up of love and compassion to whatever is arising. Suzuki Roshi said, moment after moment, you should completely devote yourself to listening to your inner voice. Well, what is your inner voice? Your inner voice is just trying so hard to come out, for you to listen to it. It's your thoughts. When I sit Zazen, I try to clear my mind so that my inner voice can come up in these thoughts of compassion and empathy towards whatever's coming up. Now, I may have baggage of thoughts that are coming up that I just don't want to deal with, but I have to approach that with some compassion and meet it and accept what is happening. My Zazen practice, I like to think, is not passive. It's very active. I think this practice is very active. It's based on our own experience. And when we sit on our cushion, when I sit on my cushion, I have to have some courage for these thoughts that are arising. My inner self is arising. Big mind is coming up. It wants to express itself. And on my ego, I have to get out of the way so that this can happen. But clinging to an idea or a fantasy or a judgment that I have only causes me suffering. And for whatever is trying to arise, it's also causing suffering to whatever that is too. So I try to choose the appropriate response. And I know Suzuki Roshi said somewhere, I couldn't find it, but he said somewhere, well, you have to get out of the way in order to choose the appropriate response. You have to do the appropriate thing. Well, how am I going to know what the appropriate thing is? You know, in Zen, they have all these, they say things and you think, I don't know what they're talking about. What are you talking about? And I realize that I have to cultivate a field of experience in my life so that I will do the appropriate thing in a very non-judgmental way, a compassionate way, listening to my inner self and allowing these thoughts to rise and come into being in my life. I want to see things as new and fresh as they arise. All things. Experiences, walking down the street, seeing the flowers, seeing a bush, seeing a car go by. I want to see it new and fresh and have that kind of thought of empathy and compassion towards it. I don't want to see things based on my past or my expectations of the future. Now, this is what I would like to happen. So I sit zazen in order to try to cultivate this. So I made some questions here, hopefully to get a discussion going about right thought. I hope people will participate. So would anyone like to go first? Go ahead. I don't have a copy. Okay, so the first question is, when you think of right thought, what is the first thing that comes to mind?
For me personally, illusion comes to mind. Because whatever ideas I have in my experience, based on whatever experiences I have had, whatever concepts, ideas I have built, based on whatever, you know, it's a bit biased, could be an illusion. Mm-hmm. I know that it's not even like intellectual knowledge based thing, it's even for relationships, somebody that I interact with, somebody, let's say completely new relationship or pre-existing based on ideas and experiences, could be very much illusion based thoughts that I have in my mind. That's all I
think. And how do you deal with that?
Quite honestly, very poorly. On an intellectual level, I think I do reasonably well, but on a relationship, I personally deal with it based on it's a big challenge for me. It's to deal with it without pre-existing biases. That is a big
challenge. Anyone else have a thought?
Actually, examining the meaning of the question, you know. Might be self-contradictory, but thinking that there are rights and wrong thoughts, this thought itself, it's wrong, so it means that recognizing that something is right, it is the there is issue that it's not right and wrong, actually, at least formally. Because to have proper thoughts, you need the right thoughts, but this duality maybe is the thing you have to transcend. That's what I can see.
Does anyone have any comment about right and wrong thoughts? What comes to mind when you think of right thought?
Well, the first little litmus test, I'm thinking I'm learning my kindergarten lessons in Buddhism is it self-centered, or is it more generous and more concerned with those around me? Around me, you know, where's my center of concern and focus? That's what I might these days ask myself if I was on the ball.
Anyone else?
To go to your practical metaphor of a garden, it would seem like right thought could be related to what helps you to nurture your garden and what isn't helpful, for example. So if it's not raining and you're thinking about how it's not raining, that may not be helpful, but and you're worrying. But if you decide, well, it's not raining, maybe I can dig a well, that would be something that's nurturing somehow. So maybe right thought could be more like what creates suffering and what can help me, you know, in the cultivation.
It feels like it comes out of a calm mind. It seems to feel right, in a sense. It doesn't have the selfishness or the negative qualities about it. But I can't think of an objective definition of right thought. It's something that's born out of compassion. From a heart.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like right thought.
Yeah, I think for me, what I distinguish is between habitual thought, something that just comes up because I have always had this belief or somebody gave me this belief a long time ago, and fresh thought, just this is appropriate to this situation, this is what is right now, and I don't have to see it through a frame. I don't have to see it through a filter. So I think trying to open up to non-habitual ways of thinking might be part of what would encourage. We tend to have prejudices embedded very deeply in our habits.
When I think of right thought, I think of sort of a negative definition. I think the absence of delusion. I think the absence of ignorance, the absence of attachment, the absence of hatred, and thoughts that sort of are antidotes to those sort of delusions. So thoughts that lead to happiness and that lead away from suffering.
To me, the right thought is something that's true. It's not a story, I mean, it's not something that is factual. There's some basis, some principle, it sticks to some type of principle.
Yes.
When I think of right thought, I actually think more of right thinking. That maybe it's not the individual thoughts that are right or wrong or good or bad, but the process that I put in place around it and the way that I'm interacting with my thoughts. I think that right thinking or helpful thinking is to be curious about your own thoughts and to wonder, is that so? Is that so? Is that to be curious about them and find out, about immediately believing everything you think. And so maybe the process is something that you can work on. But it seems like the content, I don't know where it comes from. You're just sitting there and suddenly thoughts arise, and if you don't attach them, then sometimes they go away.
So to me, a thought is only right with respect to a goal or objective or point of view. So for example, if I'm playing basketball and the hoop is there, a right thought is get the ball in the hoop. And if I'm on the opposing team, the right thought is block the ball, don't let it in the hoop. And if I'm the camera guy, it's like, let's get a lot of near misses because that makes for an exciting game and people will watch it. And if I'm a hot dog vendor, it's like, let's make this game as long as possible, enough, a lot of timeouts and stuff, because I need to sell hot dogs. So it's, everyone has their own right thought for their situation, their perspective. So in terms of what is an actual right thought, I guess it would be taking into consideration all perspectives and seeing what makes things work best with all of these infinite points of view and different identities going on.
I think when I first encountered the idea of right thoughts as part of the Eightfold Path, it really puzzled me because right and wrong was not, it's something that I think is quite problematic when you attach it to something like thought, which is often beyond your control. And it reminded me of an episode when I was young, I was 5 years old. And I was a very enthusiastic Christian at the time. And I think somebody had told me, or I read somewhere, somebody said to me, God can hear all your thoughts. Everything that you think, God can hear it, and he'll take it on board, and it's going to matter. And I heard this, and I thought, oh. And the first thing that came to my mind was all these dreadful thoughts about God. And these absolutely blasphemous thoughts that just kept coming into my head. God is bad, God smells, God is ugly. And it drove me absolutely bonkers because the more I tried not to think about it, and the more I was convinced I was having these thoughts that were going to send me to hell, the more I kept having them. And so one day I cracked, and I think I told my mother, and she was very sweet, and she kind of convinced me that she it wasn't so serious what was happening. But I feel like that kind of that suspicion of right and wrong has stayed with me ever since then, as far as thoughts are concerned.
Sure.
When I think of right thought, I think of treatment. Like how I treat my own thinking and how I treat or express to myself doubts or positive experiences about a way that I'm thinking. So what I mean by that is if I'm having a really negative thought, that I think right thinking is sort of being able to take a step back from the negative thought and look at it and appreciate it and allow it to go away on its own instead of trying to push it away. And the same when it's a positive thought, that I feel that sometimes I can become attached to that and want to hold on to those positive thoughts and keep them, which then down the road ends up leading in many cases to suffering because they don't stick around in permanence, right? So I think realizing and seeing that the good is impermanent, the bad is impermanent, and just having that sort of this perspective of viewing my own thoughts is a right way of thinking about thoughts.
I'm trying to couple the second question also.
We are going to get on to the second one.
A thought is a thought. It just comes into the mind. I think for me, the second question, whether it is right or correct, it's in what situation you got that thought. What brought that thought into your mind? If it's anger, what is bringing that thought into your mind? If it's being afraid, what is bringing that thought into your mind? What is bringing that thought into your mind? Is it right or not right? And thought usually converts into action. And as long as the action is not unethical or hurts anyone or is unselfish, it is right. But I do feel the thoughts just come into the mind. When you have a thought, you don't have a chance to say it's the right thought I have or it's the wrong thought I have. Thought just comes, but why are you thinking that way? The way I think is, you always I have kids, so I always relate to that. It's like you always need to be positive and give positive examples, or because that generates thoughts that are positive, right? But if every day you give them examples of wrong things in the world, or which are facts, which is true, but the thoughts that come with the innocent mind in mind may not be the right ones. I just feel the circumstances that bring the thoughts into the mind can make them right.
Well, perhaps we can move to question number two. So how can you tell if a thought is right or correct? Some of you already touched on this. Any ideas out there about how you can tell? Or maybe you can't tell.
Well, when I think of a thought or a belief as being right, I think of the notion that I need justifiable evidence to know whether the thought is right or correct. And what constitutes justifiable evidence really depends on the context and the content of the thought. For example, if my thought is I'm sitting in this chair, the justifiable evidence would be sense data. I feel the chair beneath me. I can see the chair. That's so justifiable evidence. The acquisition of justifiable evidence would be for me how I can tell if a thought is right or correct.
Well, I just have this terrible urge to introduce a more complex predicament. I'll just shoot through this really quickly and toss it out there. But I read an article today about a woman who lost her brother in World Trade Center, and she took her years to recover. It was in the local paper today. She even tried to commit suicide a couple times, and she recently moved to Mountain View, and she said people in California don't even have any awareness of 9/11, and people out in the East Coast still honor it and so on. So she's very invested in this. And I read this, and I was deeply affected by it. But also, I made it even more complex and started thinking about the way that warfare goes back and forth between opposing ideologies and in a ricochet effect, and people get so protected. And it seems so this degree of complexity, I found myself thinking, you know, you shouldn't even be thinking about this, because no matter what you do, you're going to get into trouble, and you're going to offend someone, and you're going to become upset. And even at that point, I knew that was also wrong, because it does merit being thought about. So that's not really a question, it's just a comment. I kind of wanted to counter that with knowing whether you're sitting in the chair or not.
Okay. You want to say something?
Yes.
It's up to you.
So with determining the thoughts correct or not, I think I'm pretty bad at that. So I sort of defer to the precepts in a lot of times, and sort of use as my fallback when I'm not sure, or if I feel maybe too confident that a thought is correct or too confident that a thought is not correct, or allow myself to have a second thought about that thought, and then try to see how it relates to the precepts and whether or not it's sort of this selfish thing or this selfless thing.
Yes.
What was said about earlier about suffering, you know, the World Trade Center example, it got me thinking about, I think a right thought is seeing what is real and true about yourself and others and the world without blame and judgment. But where it gets tricky, even hearing that example, is when there is suffering, right? So if there's suffering in the world, how it's hard to see that without blame and judgment. I guess, except if you don't attach to it. Like, there is suffering. There is pain. And it becomes more of a problem, or it's not a right thought if you start to attach it or have to defend it or have other people validate it. Then it's a grasping onto, the thought.
Thank you.
So for me, a thought is right if I basically feel inspired, I feel. And it's like kind of a physical manifestation. Feel light, feel just feel good. Feel optimistic in some ways. And whereas I guess you'd say an incorrect thought, I mean, there is such a thing, or a thought, I guess it's just not helpful, is something that weighs me down. Makes me feel tired, makes me feel heavy, makes me feel lethargic, makes me feel defeated, really. And so I go kind of by my feelings, but the trick is, like, you can't go by short-term feelings. Like, if I'm hungry, and then I have a bag of potato chips, and I'm like, I'm just going to eat the whole bag, like, it might feel good for, like, 10 minutes. And then, an hour later, I'll be like, I should have made a proper dinner, the whole life. So it's a little tricky sometimes and make mistakes. So I'd say I tend to go by kind of as a compass how I feel long-term about, like, if I follow that thought, or even not even necessarily take action. Sometimes just engaging in that thought and thinking it, I feel it weighing me down or motivating me, like, keep going. So that's kind of how I gauge. And it's not really like a moral thing. It's just, is it helpful or not? Is this thought actually helping me?
Thank you. Well, let's move on to number 3. Do you trust your thoughts, ideas? Why? Or maybe you don't trust your thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, and again, I have to come back to what I said about frames of reference and illusion. I mean, when he's a kid, you know, sitting in a train, you know, it's a very common thing, right? I mean, the train starts moving and says, the its first instinct is everything is moving backwards, right? Like Supreme, or the sitting in the car and looking at the moon and saying, why is the moon traveling with us? You know, the moon is following us. That's the frame of reference for the child's mind, and it is, it's not right or wrong. It's just, you know, it's based on what the child has formed in their brain as idea of how things move and how things. So, for me, to trust thoughts and ideas, it inherently comes to based on what are ideas that I have formed based on my frames of reference about the world. And obviously, having had to revisit the frames of reference, what I knew, what I thought, I know for a fact back in 20 years ago, at that time I did believe that was correct, but I know for a fact today that that was not correct. Now, if I were to go back, having known what I had, what ideas I had, I still would think that was the right thought and right idea. So, I don't know. It's possible that what I think now, I have to trust it based on my frames of reference.
Thank you. Oh, sorry.
I definitely try not to believe everything that I think. But I think there's a little bit of Mara in me as I was trying to sort of throw me off the trail. Definitely capable of cooking some very unhelpful and destructive things. I think recognizing that there's a distinction between myself and my thoughts, or my reality and my thoughts, both helps me feel a little bit better, and also I think makes it easier to avoid becoming caught by those thoughts.
This is great fun, isn't it?
When I'm thinking about thoughts, if I know that, you know, I've had thoughts that are wrong and ideas that are wrong, but you know, like if you've been sitting zazen, you sit in your cushion and something's happened and you haven't quite figured out how to resolve it, and you're not necessarily thinking about it when you're in zazen, but you let the 40 minutes go by, and then something, you have an insight, and then you're at peace with that thought or that course of action. And I think, I don't know if it's a thought, if that's a right thought, but that coming to peace is where I want to end up, or where I do end up through the zazen process. So I don't know if it's intuition or gut, but it's more. It's just like the whole thing is, you know, this is right. And I've always wondered why patience was one of the paramitas. But I think, you know, sometimes you just have to take your time to have a right thought.
Okay, well, let's move on to number 4. So we've only got about 10 minutes left. Do you find yourself censoring your thoughts before speaking? And if so, how does this impact your behavior? There's no censorship going on? No.
I left his computer to practice tonight. Someone shared a story about overhearing some advice that let's say someone else about asking himself, on his own issue with this dude, about asking yourself, is this true? And is now the right time? And so, actually, I feel like part of my vows is to censor. Is to censor my thoughts that are disruptive and disunify people and cause suffering to others. In the same way that I think that industrial factories should be capping their pollution. In order to avoid polluting my own environment, I censor my my speech. Because I think that if suffering predominates in the world, it's because all of us let a little bit of suffering out. Do a little bit, too little to help, offset it by seeing compassion.
I don't find myself censoring my speech, but I don't really find censoring my thoughts. Meaning, if it's not helpful, whoever I will not necessarily tell someone something, if it is not aggression, but anyway, whatever it is, if it's something that, having said that, if I have some information and something, I'm not going to, change that thought in my mind about that, if I know for a fact about something. But if it's not helpful to talk about it, that point, I'm not going to say it. If it actually does matter, then I will not censor. But if it doesn't really help, then I will censor my speech.
To go along with what both of you said, absolutely we have to be mindful about how we express ourselves and how it will come across. Is it the right time? Is it going to be helpful? But at the same time, I think it's very important, like you said, I don't censor my thoughts, I just censor when I speak it, right? What I say. Because if we actually confuse it with suppressing certain thoughts, that can be really dangerous. Mm-hmm. Like, we start to feel or think something, and if we just push it under, like, I don't want to think about that, then there could be something subconscious that eventually blows up. So I think it's important that we at least internally process that, and that's part of why we do meditation, to let whatever comes up come up. And then we can then think about, after considering all the different battling thoughts, what we should then do about it. So I think you both pretty much captured that. But I just wanted to also emphasize the importance of, even though you might not speak a lot of what we're thinking, we also shouldn't run away from it or suppress it internally.
To the list of asking, something as true, if something is helpful, if this is the right time. But I've also heard, is it kind? And I think that's important, Are you being considerate of the person? Are you being loving, compassionate, but loving and kind and selfless and all of those good things?
So I would have a follow-up question rather than an answer for you. And sometimes I just I don't speak. I just sit quietly. Do you think that's a part of censorship, that my brain enforces on myself so that I don't speak anything? Or?
You're thinking. It isn't all about just speaking. If you couldn't speak, you're still thinking. You're experiencing these beings, these thoughts that are arising. in yourself. You know, our impacting our behavior. Our behavior could be anything from what I do with my body and how I experience the world. It's not limited to just speaking. It's also how I express myself anyway. You know, but I can be sitting in zazen and I have these thoughts coming up, and my behavior, it's how I approach what's happening. I mean, I'm a great one for sitting and all of a sudden I'm thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner and pulling myself back to my zazen mind. That's a behavior. I mean, it's just, you know, we have to look at it in a very broad view here. This is our life, how we experience this world. This is our experience in this world. So I don't know if that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So we only have a few more minutes. Maybe we can touch on. Let's see, we've got two more questions. Five, what happens when we stop focusing on our usual repetitive negative thoughts? This is the scripts that we have in our heads where we think of something or we see something, we experience something, and we still have this mindset. What happens when we step back from that?
You get to groove the now.
Groove.
The now.
The now. Good.
Actually, I'm finding that it is helping at least me stop focusing on some thoughts to reduce my vocabulary, to use simple words. You can even see that when in marketing you remove all the kind of buzzwords and nothing is left. So if you remove from thoughts, you remove the labels and the clutter, then there is only emotions that are left. And when you focus on emotions that are more basic, you can go very easily to ground level without elaborating this huge infrastructures that are just labels we give to, like a map of longitude, latitude, but they are not there. So I think that a good way for me, at least, for stopping focusing on some of my negative, but even positive things, is just to reduce them to the bare essentials.
Do we have time for one more? The last one? Can we squeeze it in? We want to be compassionate towards it, you know. If you accepted everything just as it is, without judgment, what do you think would happen?
Cortisol levels would go down.
All levels?
Cortisol levels would go. That's the stress.
Oh, the cortisol. Okay. It would all go down. Okay. Okay. Oops. Okay.
I think we could actually respond appropriately to really what's happening. Because if we don't accept things, then in a way our view is always skewed. We're always comparing what is right now to the way we think it should be. And that compromises our judgment. Whereas if we're able to actually accept what is, we'll have the best chance of responding appropriately to what actually is.
I think you would have liberation and expansiveness because you would see the whole show, you would see everything as it is. And but it includes seeing your own suffering as well as the other person's suffering. And I keep thinking of families who maybe had their child murdered, and they forgive the murderer. They start meeting up with them in prison, and they start to see the whole view. And there's liberation and compassion and expansiveness versus staying, you know, attached to the right and wrong defensive view.
Oh, one more, and then I think we're going to have to stop.
Yes, I'm reminded of a Buddhist story in which the Buddha taught, or at least so I've heard, that when an elephant is destroying their house, there's a problem there. You have to make a judgment in that judgment. If somebody's trying to burn down your house, you make a judgment in that specific example. You can't just accept it as it is. Yet on the other hand, as we've been talking about, judgments, excessive judgments, or judgments in the wrong context, are also very, very harmful. So I think it's more, at least to me, the middle way. Not sort of accepting everything as just everything that's happening around you. If somebody's trying to kill you, or somebody's trying to burn down your house, I wouldn't accept that. But it's also not making sort of excessive judgments or the wrong type of judgments. It's the middle way.
Well, we're going to have to end. I want to thank everybody for giving me this opportunity to present this. Got me out of my comfort zone. And thanks for coming. I hope it was fruitful for all of you. Or maybe not. So, anyway, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
What's the topic next one? The next one is right speech.